Okay, folks, we are at 7:31, so I'm going to go ahead and mute all right now. As per usual, you will be able to unmute yourself. Please feel free to do so if you have a comment or question, and remute yourself afterwards to keep background noise to a minimum. Later on this evening, the contents of the deck and PDF form, as well as the audio track and the contents of the chat window, will go up on the website, courtesy of the hard work of Alan. And with that, once again, welcome to any new members or new people that we have on the call tonight. If you want to become a member, there is in the chat a link to where you can go on the website to join. But we do welcome guests at any time at the Ottawa PC User Group. And with that, Alan, lead us through tonight's deck. And Alan, you're muted. Oh,
yes,
no,
I was just trying to find the control. Okay, thanks, Chris. Okay, so we'll get going. We have a bunch of stuff tonight, but I think we're going to have time for questions. So I see there's one question already in the chat window, and Tom's trying to answer it in the chat, so that's good. So if you have questions, put it in the chat, or later on we'll probably open the mics and you can ask away. Okay, so to start off, I have a follow-up on an encryption program we were talking about previously. The question was basically about sending in your computer for repair and how do you hide your personal data files. And I'd suggested using encryption. And I'd mentioned that in the past I'd used a program called AxeCrypt. And this is the article in the newsletter from way back when, I forget how long ago. But you notice that it's an open source program. AxeCrypt is open source. And it's produced by a company called Axantum Software in Sweden. And of course, I tried to look this thing up, and now what you get is, it's still open source, which is amazing, but you get 1 month free, so it's a trial, it's a trial program these days. It's not completely freeware. And if you want to use it after the month, then you have to start paying money at various levels, as shown here. But then I had the bright idea that there's this website called Alternative 2, and you can look up software and see what other programs are similar to the one that you're interested in. So I went on to Alternative 2, and I asked about AxeCrypt, and it has very limited number of options. One of them is called Secrets with an X. And I thought this was, well, first of all, if you notice here, it says it's 100% compatible with AxeCrypt, but it's less complex. But the oddball thing is it's still open source, but it's called freemium. Now, I don't understand freemium and open source, so this was too good to miss. I had to take a look. So I went on to the Secrets website, and sure enough, it's 100% compatible with AxeCrypt, and the reason for that is because it's really a branch of AxeCrypt. It's produced by the same Swedish company. So I downloaded it anyway to see what freemium open source software looks like, and I started to run it, and it told me that, well, the encryption limit is 1 megabyte. So it's really not a trial. It's actually crippleware. They've taken the open source and they've changed the program so that you can't encrypt files that are any bigger than 1 megabyte. So in my view, that's basically useless. I wouldn't even consider using that. So I immediately uninstalled it. But then I thought, well, it's open source, so maybe I'll just get the source code and compile it or create a fork of it and see how that works. So when I'm looking for the source code, I find there's a whole bunch of free encryption programs which aren't listed in Alternative 2. And one of the websites I found was called List of Freeware. And it had a whole raft of encryption programs listed. And the very first one, he says, is my favorite. I'm looking for AES encryption because I know that's the encryption standard that ActScript was using. And he says his favorite one is called Encrypt on Click. So I thought, well, if that's the first one, I might as well have a look at that one. And it turns out that's created by this company called Two Bright Sparks. And they have a bunch of utilities which are called OnClick utilities, and they're all free. So there's Delete on Click and Find on Click and Hash on Click, and there's Encrypt on Click, which it says secures files out of sight. And you notice here it says it's 100% free software. So that's definitely worth a look. And sure enough, it works very much like ActScript used to. So when you launch the program, you get this little menu. On the left hand side, you can encrypt files or folders. And on the right hand side, you can decrypt files or folders. So if you choose to encrypt a file, the first thing you have to do is to give it a password. And again, this is where you make sure that you remember the password, write down the password, store the password in a file somewhere safe. Because if you forget this password and you encrypt the file, then you will not be finding the contents of that file ever again. However, you also note that it has this option to do not delete the file after encrypting. So because I'm playing with this, I decided I would check that so I would get the encrypted file but keep the original. And so I said okay, I set my password. I say okay, and you can see that I've got a simple text file here called fox.txt, and the encrypted one, it has a .eoc encrypt on click extension, which tells me that this is the encrypted file. But that doesn't really tell you very much. So let's open these files in Notepad++. And you can see on top here that my original file just has some simple text line here. But the encrypted file is basically binary. So again, if you don't know the password to unencrypt that, then you're not going to be able to figure out what it was. The other thing you can do, which is really useful and works very much, well, it works exactly the same as ActScript used to do, is that you can encrypt a folder, a whole folder of files, rather than just a single file. So I tell it to encrypt a folder, and again, you have to give it the password, and this time you have an option, encrypt the file names. And you remember we were talking about that last time, where if you don't encrypt the file names and somebody opens the zip file, as it was then they can see the file names inside the zip, and that might give them some kind of clue. If you encrypt the file names, then it becomes really difficult because the file names are encrypted, so you can't see what they are, and the contents of the files are encrypted, so you can't decrypt them. So if you do that, if you encrypt the file names, then you get a folder. So if you open my folder called Foxes, you can see it has three files in it, but the file names are encrypted, so you can't see what they are. And you can't click on these because the files are encrypted and you can't do anything with them. If I use the decrypt, then you can see that I have actually three text files. They're actually all just copies of fox.txt, but the program works really well. It's very simple. It encrypts single files very easily, and it encrypts whole folders very easily. So if you have any use for file encryption, this is open source, it's completely free, and it works incredibly well. So there you go. That's Encrypt on Click. Okay, so moving along on security issues, Chris has an item here on AI.
Yeah, we've been talking a fair amount about AI and a lot of it about the horrors of what it can be used for and things like that. But this I found really interesting. This is an article on use of AI in security on computers. And so this is an article by Andrew Newman. And he was with Giant Anti-Spyware, which was bought up by Microsoft, and it was turned into originally the Microsoft Security Essentials, which then became Windows Defender, which then became Microsoft Defender. And so it's been it was the basis of what Microsoft used for antivirus and anti-malware in general. He's still around, still doing things. He's the CTO and the co-founder of Reason Labs, and they have some products out available, like antivirus products and things like that. So he's got good credentials and so forth, and he writes a fair amount. And this article was specifically titled AI Importance for Security Companies and Consumers. So I pretty much just ignored the security companies for this presentation, and I'm just focusing on consumers. Next. So some of the highlights in the article that I thought were interesting, AI-powered anti-malware. And so this is quite an interesting thing. So rather than a signature-based antivirus that actually looks for exact byte patterns in known malware, AI could be used to analyze what programs are doing and quarantine things in real time. And this will be able to handle unknown or brand new malware because it'll be looking more into the behaviors and things like that. So he thinks that that's going to be a really big deal in anti-malware moving to AI-powered rather than signature-based or in addition to perhaps. He thinks that email security could be helped by AI to help protect from phishing emails. And that really makes sense because, you know, AI could analyze the email more than just looking for keywords and, you know, get a really good sense about whether something is a phishing email or not. Password security. So he thinks that it can be used to generate strong, unique passwords and so forth, and flag potential breaches on your computer. And then the last big one that I saw in there were some other ones as well, but the last big one I thought was AI-powered routers and firewall solutions, where it can analyze network traffic and through AI block suspicious network activity. So I think it's an interesting article. If you're interested in how AI can actually be used for good, you might want to read the article, and the URL has been pasted into the chat, and it'll be in the deck if you download the deck later on. That's it.
Yeah, it's interesting, Chris. That's actually one of the few articles that talk about the good things that AI can do.
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, Chris is Tom has got a thing in the chat here. A BBC article, apparently. Yeah. AI can be used by the bad guys too without any rules. Well,
yeah. I mean that's the case with any tool, right? It can be used for good or evil. But this was just highlighting some of the good things that AI could be used for, which I thought was refreshing.
Today and tomorrow, there's an AI summit going on. In Bletchley Park, with a whole bunch of countries and tech leaders involved, mainly looking at ways to control AI and make rules about it. But of course, bad guys tend not to follow any rules.
Yeah, and I also heard that from a lot of experts apparently are poo-pooing that summit because they say that there's all kinds of stuff that was left off the table that they're not even going to discuss because it's too controversial, and so it's going to be a pretty toothless summit from what I understand.
And Tim notes that Biden's bringing in rules. He just signed some kind of executive order about things from AI. But I think the Senate is also concerned, and they're talking about more regulations.
Yeah, if people are interested in what Biden has put out there as an executive order, SANS has done some analysis on it, and on their website at sans.org, you can read up on what they think about it. And I was expecting that they were going to say that it was toothless or and so forth, but they actually had some positive things to say about what Biden signed as an executive order. A lot of caveats, but they thought it was overall a pretty positive thing.
And Carol says she just noticed an AI companion at the bottom of the Zoom screen on the kind of taskbar. Is it new? She never noticed it. Well, I can see the same thing. I've got no idea what it does.
It is pretty new, but I haven't looked into it either, what the heck it does.
Maybe somebody would like to check that out and report to us next week.
Yeah.
Well, currently okay, so the administrator has to give permission, so I just ask for permission.
Before enabling anything, I'm going to I'll do some reading up on it, whether this is something that we actually want to allow or not. So I will look into that before next week's session.
Well, you have control over that, Chris.
Yeah, I have control over it. So I get a pop-up saying Tom Trache is requesting AI companion. Zoom will use AI technology, which may include third-party models to provide the AI service, and so forth. It goes on with a couple of paragraphs. So I will look into that and see whether that's something that we really want to enable or not.
Okay, so sounds like a follow-up.
Not now.
Sounds like a follow-up for next week, or next 2 weeks. Okay, so there are a couple of questions about encryption. Bill wants to know how quickly does it encrypt encrypt on click, and I really don't know. It was very fast in my case, but as Elizabeth notes, my file was very small, which would encrypt very quickly. Do I think it works okay for larger files? I think it does, but I really don't know. I haven't tried it. But I'll take a look at both of those and get back to everybody. Okay, so moving along, I have another installment in speeding up old Windows computer. And I just noticed here that the second bullet here, a comment from a friend, my Windows laptop is so slow, it really slow. And I'm actually working on this computer right now, and so slow really means slow. It's incredibly slow, and it's all over the map. It takes sometimes it's 30 seconds, and sometimes it's 2.5 minutes to boot. One time it took 4 minutes to shut down. So it has some kind of problem, and I'm struggling to find out what it is. But one of the suggestions that came in a while ago when I was doing this thing on PC Manager, Jeff Dubois mentioned DISM, which is a Microsoft product. It's called Deployment Image Service and Management Tool. And he said he was having a problem with Windows 10 a while back, and he called Microsoft, and they suggested using DISM. And you notice it does this clean up image, check health type command. And then if there's a problem, you use a restore health function to do something to try and fix it. So I actually took a look at this thinking that it might solve my laptop problem. And I found this article in Computer World, how to repair Windows 10 and Windows 11 in 4 steps. And the first step was basically running DISM and System File Checker. So this is really only the first step. The other steps are things like using a restore point, using a recovery image, and then finally doing either a recovery or a fresh install of Windows using the repair function. Their first step was running the DISM, and sure enough, there are the two commands that Jeff mentioned, the check health command, and then if the check health finds any file corruption, then you run this restore health function. And when you've done all of the above, then you run the system file checker, which uses the scan now switch to run like right now. And just note that you need to open up a command window, so you go into the search box and say CMD. And when you get the app, you need to run it with administrator privileges. You open a command window with admin privileges, and then you type in this DISM command to run the check health. And then you follow that up with the system file check command. So I did that on my machine. And unfortunately, you note here the first one, no component store corruption detected, operation completed successfully. So DISN didn't find anything wrong. And then I did the system file check and no integrity violations. So those two things weren't the problem with my laptop. So the story continues, and we'll get back to that at a future point when I've either fixed it or thrown the thing through the nearest bedroom window. Okay, moving along. Chris has some information.
Just before we move on, I will point out that running DISM with those two command lines for DISM, as well as System File Checker, they can be run anytime. There's no danger in running it. You don't have to have a damaged Windows in order to actually run it. But they, if they do find anything, they can, you know, fix up some things. So, you know, if you wanted to run it on your computer just to have a check, absolutely no danger in it. It does take a little bit of time for the commands to run. But no harm will come to your computer by running those.
Yeah, it takes a few minutes, but it's actually pretty quick.
Okay.
Compared to Windows Update, and as Jocelyn says, Windows Update is so slow, and it interferes with Zoom for him. So, okay, Windows 11 on updates, Chris.
Yeah, so Microsoft is coming out with the 23H2, which is Windows. The official name of it is Windows 11 2023 Update. And I say here it should be rolling out on Patch Tuesday, which is, you know, the coming up next week, second Tuesday of the month. And then it will roll out over a couple of months. If you just wait for it to be automatically offered to you, you may get it on Patch Tuesday, or you may get it in some weeks or months ahead after that. If you want, you can get it early. So if you want to be on the bleeding edge of things, which is before the unwashed masses have gotten it, and maybe problems have been reported to Microsoft and maybe they've been fixed up before you get it, if you want, you can go ahead and get it, and you can actually get it now. This is a quote from Microsoft saying that it's on eligible devices running Windows 11 version 22H. Sorry, that should be H2, 22H2. So the last feature update. I don't know what will happen if you're on a version of Windows 11 that is older than version 22H2, whether it'll go ahead and update from that or whether it'll update you to 22H2 first and then you can update to 23H2, I don't know. The two computers I had, they were both running 22H2. So if you want it, you go to Settings and you go to the Windows Update. Now, Microsoft says you have to turn on, get the latest updates as soon as they're available, and then click on Check for Updates. You don't actually have to do that. On the two computers that I updated today, when I went there, it already said in that box saying Windows 11 version 23H2 is available, and I had the option to download and install. You notice that in the box below that, where it says get the latest updates as soon as they're available, that is turned off, and I did not turn that on. I was able to click on Download and Install. Now, as soon as I clicked on Download and Install, it said, do you want to get updates as soon as they're available? And I said no, and then it went ahead and it did the installation just of 23H2, so without turning on that toggle. I guess Microsoft is now pushing anybody who is brave enough to go into Windows Update and select that they want something like Windows 11 23H2, they may actually want to get latest updates on everything in the future as soon as they're available. Personally, I don't. So I did go ahead and I installed it for the two computers I have. It was very quick, under 10 minutes from start to finish, from the time I clicked on, download and install, for it to go through the download, which seemed to be a very small amount of data that actually came down, to the installation, the reboot. It was under 10 minutes on each of the computers, so it was very, very fast. So next.
So Tom's noting that on his computer, the update isn't available yet.
Yeah.
With 22H2.
Yeah, so if you go to the next slide. So Microsoft says they will look on your particular device, and if they detect that there is an issue with something that is a known issue, such as an application incompatibility or something like that, they will just silently not offer you 23H2. The hope is that Microsoft will iron out what that incompatibility really is, how to address it. When they address it, then they will offer you 23H2. So they have what they call is a safeguard in order to not offer the update on a computer that they think might have problems with it. If you want to read more on it, there is the Windows Release Health site that has a lot of information about various versions of Windows, including 23H2, what's new in it, how to get it, and things like that. It's a really good website if you want more information about latest, greatest things in patching on Windows and stuff like that. Next. So what's new? Microsoft says there are nearly 200 new features. Some of the highlights in here that I thought sort of stood out, and I was reading a number of websites on new features, and these are the ones that I thought were probably the most interesting. Copilot for Windows. And then they have updated with AI features. So these are existing programs that are included with Windows, and they've updated with AI features. So in Photos, that shouldn't be background removal under Photos. That should be background blur. They have enhanced search capabilities, so you are more likely to be able to search for, find all my photos that have a man on the beach or something like that, and it will go through and it'll hopefully find things like that. Paint actually has background removal now. Also has layers. So if you're into a layered workflow in your photography, you can actually do that, or any sort of image type stuff. Paint can now do layered approach to things. They also have input text prompt, and you can select a particular style, and then it will generate a unique image. That is all generated by DALL-E. And you can actually get all of that capability if you just go to, I think it's images dot, if you search in Edge on Bing Image Creator, the first hit will be where you can actually go and type in these sort of prompts and get it to generate for you. Clipchamp has the video editor that Microsoft is now pushing, and it has an auto-compose. It can suggest scenes, suggest edits, suggest a narrative to go along with your particular video. Snipping tool has gained the ability to record audio as well as video on your screen, and it can actually extract text from a video as well as redact text in a video. So if you do a screen recording and it's got things like, say, an email address that you don't want to have show up or something like that, you can actually have it redact text out of it. So I look forward to looking at some of those. A lot of these features, quite frankly, are available now in just different ways of getting into it. Like Copilot for Windows, that's basically just ChatGPT capability that is now available in Edge. Passkeys is a new way of authenticating to Windows, and so this will be your passwordless ability to log into Windows and websites and things like that. Seems to be coming on gangbusters as the way to go to get away from passwords. They say there's a new Outlook. I haven't looked into it at all. Adobe Express, I haven't looked into that either. Chat has now become Microsoft Teams, and so they're replacing the existing desktop Microsoft Teams client, and they're replacing it with a new version that is now coming out in this 23H2. And in Microsoft's typical fashion, it is after you install it, you will have Teams pinned to the taskbar by default. So if you don't want it, when you see it pop up there, right-click on it and choose Unpin from Taskbar. They're introducing the Windows Backup. This is a new version of Windows Backup. It does require use of OneDrive in order to do its backup. But one of the nice features about it is that it can allow it a lot easier to move to a new PC. It will take all your settings and your store apps, and when you say you want to install on a new computer, it will give you the option to actually install from or look for the configuration from a Windows backup that is on your OneDrive and then just automatically apply it. Now, it doesn't do Win32 apps. It only does apps that are from the Windows Store, which by default, if you logged in using the same Microsoft account, you would get all of those installed anyway. So I don't know, you know, just how much of it is this really a benefit and an enhancement, but it's there. They have a bunch of energy saving features that are kind of interesting. We kind of approach would be if your computer goes to sleep or I'm not sure if it's sleep or just the screen going off. As you walk up to your computer, if it has a camera that it can sense you're coming back, it'll automatically turn the screen on. Lock on leave, where you, if you are not sitting in front of the computer, it'll detect that, oh, there's nobody there, and it'll automatically lock the computer. Adaptive dimming is where, depending on your background lights and that, it can actually brighten or darken the screen. Darkening the screen if it's bright enough, and that'll save battery life. And there's a number of other energy saving features that are available as well. So there's some kind of cool features in it there. I don't know that it's all that critical, but for me, it went in really smoothly. And so, as always, if you do a feature update to Windows, I highly recommend that you have a full backup of an image backup for your computer before you do the backup. So if anything bad happens, you can back up. But it seems to be almost like a monthly update in terms of, you know, how smoothly it goes in and how quickly it goes into your computer. So cool stuff. I think, you know, nothing really bad and some nice things.
So do they have a feature if you swear at Windows, it gives a blue screen of death?
Yeah, it's called what is it, their complaint thing there, Windows feedback.
I think that's about,
that's about the only thing you can do. Well, you can go ahead and swear if you want for yourself. It's not going to do a whole lot of good. If you go to Windows, the feedback hub, there's a chance Microsoft will actually be paying attention to feedback there. I'm not sure, but might make you feel a little bit better.
The thing I find interesting about the snipping tool is, what, didn't 2 years ago they threatened they were going to get rid of snipping tool?
Well, Microsoft is really famous for this, of taking away features and bringing them back. And some of the things that I've noted are new in the 23H2 are features that Microsoft had in Windows 10. They took out, and the first implementation of Windows 11 was a bit of an abomination because they stripped out all kinds of things, and then they slowly were bringing back most of these things. And so something as simple as being able to right click on the taskbar and choose Task Manager in the initial release of Windows 11, that was gone. Well, it's been brought back. There's an awful lot of this thing that Microsoft will do where they'll take away something and then they'll get enough complaints that they'll actually bring it back. I'm hoping that they're going to eventually go back to a Windows Start menu that will allow more than, what is it they have, about 18 icons on the Start menu that are pinned there. Well, the Windows 10 Start menu, you could have dozens and dozens, no problem at all. I don't see why that they limited this to, you know, only having a maximum of 18 icons on there. So I'm hoping that the Start menu is going to go back a little bit more towards what Windows 10 had. I think Bob Walker, who's on the call, he's planning on a rant of sorts of moving to Windows 11 and the things that he didn't like about it and some cautions about it and so forth at a future future Q&A session.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that. It's sort of a getting into Windows 11 as a Windows 11 newbie. As opposed to a guru like yourself, and sort of some of the gotchas, and the focus will be on making Windows 11 as much like Windows 10 as possible so that the transition isn't so traumatic.
One thing, I wouldn't consider myself a guru when it comes to Windows 11. I sort of got dragged kicking and screaming into it, and I only had it on new computers that came with Windows 11, so I was not about to undo that. I don't consider myself a Windows 11 guru, but I've learned some after having used it for a little bit. I don't really mind it. I think that a lot of things were changes for change's sake as opposed to any sort of benefit. But who knows? One thing I just noticed in the chat, and I guess you mentioned this, Alan, as Jocelyn said, that Windows Update is so slow on this machine and badly interferes with Zoom. What I would suggest for that is run the Windows Update Troubleshooter and see if that helps. There's also a way of manually reinitializing the Windows Update. And basically, you're taking away its catalog of what it knows about your computer and what it knows is supplied and reinitializes all of that. Nothing bad will happen. It's just that it might take a little bit of extra time the next time you run Windows Update as it rebuilds the catalog. But if there is corruption in the catalog or something like that, that may be causing the problem. So as I say, the Windows Update Troubleshooter would be the first thing I'd go for. If that doesn't fix the problem, I would try reinitializing Windows Update. We talked about it before at Windows at Q&A. If you can't find it, let me know and I will dig it out. And maybe I can do an update on that at the next Q&A as well, just to refresh people's memory on if they're having problems with Windows Update, what they can do about it to try and get it working better.
Also,
go ahead, Tom.
Definitely for making your computer run reasonably well, whether you have a hard disk or an SSD, make sure disk optimization is turned on so that SSDs get trimmed and files get pushed together so they get accessed faster. This is done in the by right-clicking on the disk and then choosing disk optimization for the disks that show up.
Okay, so Elizabeth has a question for the Windows 11 guru. Is it free or do we pay yearly?
Yeah, the Microsoft just changed some practices on that. Going back to Windows 10, they said they would give it as a free upgrade to anybody who is on Windows 7 or 8 for a year. Now, it turned out that they never took that away. And for years and years and years, up until very recently, you could update directly from Windows 7 or Windows 10, or sorry, Windows 8 to Windows 10 directly. I don't know that you could ever go from 7 or 8 directly to 11, but you definitely could go to 10, and then it was a free upgrade to Windows 11. Right now, they took away the ability to do a free upgrade from Windows 7 or 8. And I had some conflicting news whether you could actually do a clean install and use a Windows 7 license key or a Windows 8 license key. There's some indication that will still work, but you can't do it as an upgrade. You'd have to do it as a clean install. Currently, Microsoft does support free updates from Windows 10 to Windows 11, and certainly within Windows 11, if you go to the latest 23H2, that definitely is a free upgrade. There's no problem on that.
And there is no annual fee for it. It's
no.
At this point, they haven't gone to software as a service yet.
Yeah. If in the consumer space, that's right. In the corporation space, they definitely have gone to a model that and most corporations have bought into this, where they pay a yearly fee and they get all new versions and everything like that automatically as part of that. But in the consumer space, they haven't gone to a subscription model at all yet.
There is another difference between corporate and personal in that they're putting more ads in the personal version and which they do not put in the corporate version.
Yeah, I think if they put it into the corporate versions, they would have some very large customers screaming bloody murder at them. So,
especially if it was ads for the competition.
Yeah. Microsoft listens heavily to large corporations for sure. I used to be with NRCan, so Government of Canada was part of their premier support umbrella of support and so forth. And so I'd hear some stories about some of the things coming out of that. And it was interesting because they had some things that they wanted to pull out of Windows. And they had some very large corporate customers who said, if you do that, we are not moving to a new version of Windows and we will actively seek out another operating system. And Microsoft bowed to that pressure and decided, okay, we won't take that out then.
So there are a couple of related questions in the chat, Chris. Bill wants to know if Windows 7 or 8 machines, I guess, will be capable of running Windows 11. And Karen's asking, is there still equipment restrictions on updating from 10 to 11?
Yeah, those are both related, really, because the idea of a Windows 7 or 8 computer, if it's shipped with Windows 7 or 8 on it, it probably is not capable of running Windows 11 because Windows 11 requires both a TPM security chip as well as the other big one is the CPU level. So if you're on an Intel CPU, it's got to be an 8th gen or greater. I forget the version number on the AMD side of things that is required as a minimum. But if you have a computer that is running Windows 7 or 8, it almost certainly isn't an 8th gen or better Intel chip. There are some. So if you bought it, you know, late in the cycle, you might have a computer that has Windows 8 that has an 8th gen, but in all likelihood it won't. And if you go to the Windows Update screen and settings, so if you're on 10, if you go there, it'll tell you if your computer is not capable of running Windows 11, or if it is capable, it'll tell you, oh, you can get Windows 11. Just click here and away you go. So it's pretty easy to find out whether it is supported or not just by going to the Windows Update in settings.
I saw a YouTube video.
I saw you raising a real hand.
I just saw a YouTube video where this fellow downloaded the multi-install version of Windows 11, and then when he chose to install, he chose the Windows Server and tried to install that. And when he tried to install that, it reverted back to Windows Pro, which he actually had as the operating system he was using, and it then updated to Windows 11 Pro, even though earlier on he had shown that it doesn't meet Windows Wow. specific requirements. So if you want to upgrade to Windows 11 with an 8086, this is the way.
Yeah, there is also, there has been reported other ways of getting around the requirements for TPM chip and the level of processor. They are unsupported officially from Microsoft, and there is some concern that some people have that at some point in the future, if you've done that, where you've gone in and made these specific changes to allow Windows 11 to run on your computer, that you may run into difficulty with things like maybe Windows Update won't run or something like that. I kind of doubt that that will actually happen, but I don't see anything compelling enough in Windows 11 that would make me want to run through hoops and use unsupported techniques in order to get Windows 11. I quite frankly, I'm perfectly happy with Windows 10 as things stand right now. They're starting to get some of these features in here that, okay, that's something that I didn't have in Windows 10. But up until now, there's very little in Windows 11 that would make me think, oh, yeah, I really want to be on that rather than Windows 10. So I don't know why people were so anxious to go to Windows 11, but yeah, there are some features like that that if you really want it, you can get around the restrictions that Microsoft puts in front of you.
I agree, but one reason to go to Windows 11, if not immediately, is eventually in like about a year and 2 months or something, Windows 10 goes out of support, and that would be a reason to go to 11 at some point.
Yes, I agree if they actually stop support for 10. I strongly suspect that they're going to extend the life for Windows 10. There's just too many Windows 10 computers out there that can't be upgraded. And so are they going to leave, you know, maybe hundreds of millions of computers that are vulnerable because they can't be upgraded to a supported operating system? I don't believe it's going to happen. So it'll be like XP that got, you know, its end of life got extended about 5 years So I fully expect that well before the end of life of Windows 10, Microsoft is going to extend the life of Windows 10, or they will remove the restrictions to allow people to upgrade free on a fully supported platform. It's all of the restrictions that they have for not allowing certain computers, CPU level or the TPM chip, they're all artificial restrictions. They could remove those restrictions and allow those people to upgrade to Windows 11 if they chose to do so. There's absolutely no reason why they can't have Windows 11 running on those PCs. So I think it'll either be an extension of the life of Windows 10 or removal of the restrictions.
Yeah, and there's a petition going around right now asking for that very thing, to extend the lifetime. But I think, Tom, it's actually 2 years from now, not 1 year. It's a 2025.
Yes, yeah. Well, yes.
And actually, Tim's put in the chat here. It's October the 14th, 2025.
Okay. Yeah, so you got 2 more years. But
so you got support
saying,
until then. Yeah, and then you change to Linux.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, even if you're on Windows 10, I wouldn't worry about it until we get to, you know, at least the summer of 2025, because I think by then Microsoft will see the error of their ways. They'll see that there are still hundreds of millions of computers out there, and that it'd be unconscionable to force those people to either use an unsupported operating system or ditch a perfectly good computer and upgrade to a brand new PC. So
yeah, and that's basically the issue right there. It's the environmental issue when you're going to junk all these, you know, tens of thousands of PCs for no good reason.
Yeah, hundreds of millions of PCs, not tens of thousands. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, lots of good discussion tonight, and I've got a couple of items in the deck here, but we don't have time to cover them both. So I'm going to try and switch to one of them. Let's see where we are. Somewhere about there. No.
I can give you the slide number if you want. Tell me what slide you're aiming for.
I was looking for one or two before this one. There we are, that one.
Okay,
so just a quick one before we go into the last 10 minutes and you have all your questions handy. I just wanted to point out that we have a whole bunch of members, but a lot of people don't seem to take advantage of some of the features of our membership. For example, you don't have to wait for the next Q&A session, because after tonight, you have to wait for 2 weeks before you can ask Chris and I a question for Q&A. But if you're a member, and it's only $20 a year right now, has been for the last time immemorial, I think, for $20 a year, you can ask your question in the members-only forum. And that's the issue. Lots of members, but not everybody's joined the members-only forum. And it's really useful, because what happens is people post things, not only questions, but links to computer news, and how do you do various things, up-to-date information on software updates, warnings on malware, etc., etc. And if you go to the website, Bridget's got this nice page, Google Groups How To. It tells you how to subscribe to the forum, so you can log on at any time. And one of the just an example here, Micheline was asking, how do you convert one particular type of audio jack to another? And almost instantly, the same day anyway, I think, Howie McCumber gave a reference to one of the stores in town that has the adapter that was needed. Now, I understand you have to be very careful what adapter you buy in this particular case, because the way those rings are organized on the multi-channel plug is pretty critical. But, that's just an example of asking a question and getting an answer without waiting for Q&A. And some of the examples we've had of, interesting items that people have posted, a keyboard shortcut that gets you into the Windows dictation very easily, ways to clean up cable clutter on your desktop, how to optimize your PC for maximum performance, how to speed up all computers, for example. Some of those answers work. And if you have multiple tabs in Chrome, then apparently Google has an idea to how to fix that. And in terms of Q&A itself, Chris always says every meeting that the PowerPoint deck as a PDF file, the audio file, the sound file, and the contents of the chat window are all posted on the website. And even if you're not a PCUG member, you can access the archives. And they're structured by year. And there's also a PDF file which gives you a complete index of the archives. And if you go to the Q&A page on the website and you scroll down past our most recent Q&A session, you'll find this little section at the bottom here where you have a link to the online archives, the actual web pages, or a link to download the PDF file. So, for example, I was trying to set up the automatic free file sync backup program for a friend of mine, and I remembered that Chris had done this thing in Q&A, and I wanted to refer to his notes. So I went to the this year's page, the 2023 index, and I used Control F, which is equivalent to the find command. So find on this page, I look for free file sync, and then as we go down the page, and here's his initial one, free file sync. The one I wanted was part two, and then I've got a direct link to his PowerPoint file. Or alternatively, if I'd gone to the PDF file, then in my PDF viewer, I could have searched for free file sync, and again, it would have found the original one is actually on the top here, and then part two is down here. And then, so I know where to go look. And when I go and look in the actual PowerPoint file, it gives me chapter and verse of how to do this thing. And in particular, when I get to this stage, he reminds me that I have to enclose the entire line in quotes. And I'm sure I would have forgotten to do that, and then it wouldn't have worked, and I would have been scratching my head why it wouldn't have, I wouldn't have been able to do what I wanted to do. So if you're a PCUG member, you can use the question and answer forum. If you're not a PCU member, you can still use the online index to Q&A. And there's all kinds of other stuff on the website, which if you go look, you will find. So moving along, we're in the last 10 minutes. And I did mention at the very start, there was a question early on. And Micheline had asked, how do I remove an expired McAfee antivirus program that came bundled with the laptop and is now demanding that she renews the subscription? So Tom suggested going to settings and add programs and just like going to start, I don't know how you do that. What I would suggest, Micheline, is use Control Panel and go to uninstall a program, find the McAfee program in the list and select it, and then it will pop up a uninstall option which you can then click and make McAfee go away completely.
I didn't hear what you said I have to go to.
Control Panel. If you go in the search bar and just type Control Panel, and then you'll find one of the options is programs and apps or something, and uninstall a program is one of the links.
I can't hear you. Could you put it in chat?
I can try.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can.
Can you put it in the chat?
In addition to that,
can you see Control Panel on my screen? Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Can you see Control Panel on my screen?
I see it now. Thank you.
Okay. So down here is an uninstall the program. So if you click on that, it populates the list. You find something you don't want, like Burnaware. And when you select it, you get the uninstall option.
McAfee actually has a a known issue, even McAfee admits it, that when you do an uninstall of their products, it will leave some stuff behind. Now, my understanding is none of it is really harmful that it leaves behind or anything like that. But if you want to completely remove McAfee from a computer, they actually have a tool called the McAfee Consumer Product Removal Tool. And I pasted it into the chat, the URL for that page. And if you use that tool, I would first off try removing it through control panel or settings. And then after doing that, I would actually run the McAfee Consumer Product Removal Tool to clean up anything that's been left over.
Okay, so Glenn is asking, if a user wants to encrypt some bank statement PDF files or Excel files, and wants to read those files frequently, is there decryption software that would allow them to be decrypted? Well, basically, yes. If you have an encryption program, it will always come with a decryption option. It wouldn't be much use if you could only encrypt files. And certainly that encrypt on click does exactly that. You can encrypt or decrypt and directly from that menu.
But he's looking to not actually write it to disk and just have it, the program access it just in memory only. And I don't know that there are any programs that will actually do that. All of them that I've ever come across, they have to create a temporary disk file and then the application can access it through that. But I may be wrong. If anybody knows of something that will decrypt, encrypt and then decrypt to memory only and allow a program to access it that way, might be interesting, yeah.
Personally, you decrypt the file to a PDF and then encrypt the PDF and then delete it. Nobody's going to be able to figure it out.
My suggestion would be to take a look at that program that Alan brought tonight and see if you can encrypt a folder. And then if it works nicely, then whenever you move a file to that folder, it will get encrypted. And whenever you want to access it, you put in the password and you can decrypt it. And then you just have one folder and call it secret files. And then have that be where you want to put all your secret stuff and have that encrypted. Now, ideally, it encrypts whenever you move something there. And when you want to decrypt it, you have to bring it out.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't work that way. When you encrypt a folder, it's a point in time. It encrypts everything there. But you can't just throw something into that folder and expect it to be encrypted. It will encrypt what is there at that point in time.
I wonder maybe a zip file created with 7-zip or a 7-z file with a password might work more conveniently to do that. Plus it'll save some space.
Yeah,
but then it's still encrypting the whole file, the whole zip file.
Everything in the zip file would be encrypted, yes.
But I know that
you can't
that's
just
what you want.
Like Chris says, you can't just pull out one item from the file. You have to, from the folder, encrypt everything.
You can extract single files out of an encrypted zip file. The thing that you can't do with it that I know of is decrypt to memory only. So if I look at a folder that is an encrypted zip file, Windows will treat it as if it's just a folder. So you'll see the files in there, and when you provide the password, you can copy files in and out. What I don't think you can do is if I have a program that wants to access, say, a doc file or something like that, point it to that folder and expect it to extract the file in memory only into Word, allow you to edit it, and then write it back into that encrypted file. I don't think you can do that. My experience has always been with encrypted zip files that, or any kind of zip file, is that when you go to access a file, it will actually copy that file out of the zip file into the temporary directory and then allow you to your program to access it from that location. That's been my experience with it anyways.
So Micheline's asking, when she removes McAfee, how does she check if Microsoft Defender is working? Just go to System and security.
Yeah.
Find Defender and then run a simple scan, a quick scan, they call it.
Yeah, another way of doing it is if you just click on the start button and go to Windows Security, that'll tell you whether you have antivirus running or not. Windows Security, by default, if you have no other antivirus, it will warn you that, you don't have an active antivirus program, and it'll offer to turn on Microsoft Defender.
Okay, well, thanks, everyone. We're at the witching hour here, so we've got a few things to follow up for next week, and if anybody has any other questions, you can always ask them. However, in the meantime, just remember that next week, November the 8th, will be our regular monthly meeting, and we have this presentation by Howard Simcover on celestial shadows, eclipses of the sun and the moon. So if you have any interest in astronomy, then next week is especially for you. And because we have a regular meeting next week, then there will not be a Q&A. So our next Q&A will be on the 15th. So you have two whole weeks to figure out what your questions should be or put your slides together to share topics of interest with everyone else. Hope you found tonight interesting and informative, and we'll see you next week. We'll see you next week at the regular meeting and in 2 weeks for Q&A. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, folks. We'll see you next week.